couldn't eat another bowl of chicken soup if I tried. So we're still going to slog along here. We were in committee last night and my other committee till 9:30. So it's been a short night. I have a rule in my committee. It's simply that you have to turn off all your cell phones and PDAs and those kinds of electronic devices. So if you didn't already do that, please do so now so that you do not rudely interrupt the people who testify. If you do, I'll ask you to make a contribution to the Common School Fund. So far, I think I've only levied that fine once this session, and we're kind of down on money. So, but don't test me, because I have a sharp eye. We have a lot on our agenda, as we always do in this committee. I'm so pleased with the work that we do. My committee members are attentive and thoughtful, and actually had some input in a couple of these bills today. So we're going to get started. I'm going to open a public hearing on both of the tag bills that are up at the same time, so just feel free to testify about either one. I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 312 and Senate Bill 622. The committee administrator, Dana Richardson, our beautiful right-hand, left-hand person here, will tell us about the two bills, and then we'll get started.
Madam Chair, Senate Bill 312 requires school districts to submit plans of instruction for talented and gifted children to the Superintendent of Public Instruction. It declares an emergency and would take effect July 1st, 2007. Senate Bill 622, we have two amendments before them. Would you like me to speak to the bill as well as the amendments?
Please.
Senate Bill 622 requires the Department of Education to employ one full-time employee to administer the Talented and Gifted Program. It requires the department to establish regional talented and gifted planning centers. It requires school districts to submit plans of instruction for talented and gifted children to the Superintendent of Public Instruction, which committee members will note is reminiscent of Senate Bill 312. It declares an emergency and takes effect July 1st, 2007. The Dash 1 amendments before the committee remove the requirement for districts to submit talented and gifted plans of instruction to the Superintendent of Public Instruction. And if the committee chose to move that that amendment forward, 312, that requirement could always be carried in Senate Bill 312. The Dash 2 amendments appropriate $160,000 to establish the Talented and Gifted Planning Centers. It requires a half-time employee to serve as the coordinator for a regional planning committee, and it specifies the planning center activities. This bill has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and if I may, Madam Chair, mention one additional bill that is not scheduled today but that is relevant to the committee's conversations about TAG programs, and that is Senate Bill 721, which requires the Department of Education to employ at least one-time full-time employee to administer the Talented and Gifted Program. We didn't schedule that today inadvertently, but I wanted to make the committee aware that different components essentially of this conversation are available in different bills and different amendments.
And we just might be able to stick that one in one of our other bills here as well. Okay, last legislative session, I promised the TAG folks that we would address TAG this session. And so here we are, and we've got a couple of bills to do that. I have no one signed up for 312, so it must be the focus must be on 622. I'm going to start out with 622 by having Ms. Becca Feathers come up and testify, because she's done a lot of work inside the Capitol here on that bill. So, Ms. Feathers, I signed you up since you didn't sign yourself up.
She was expecting me to do that, you see. Now she has to learn that when it's your bill, you testify.
That's right. So that's your first lesson. But you know the drill. You state your name and where you're from, and then give us what you want.
All right. For the record, my name is Becca Feathers. I'm from Portland. I'm a legislative assistant to Senator Metzger, listening on the dais, not testifying. I am here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 622. If you'll allow me to first provide a brief history of the Talented and Gifted Program in Oregon for you. In 1987, the Oregon Legislature passed the Oregon Talented and Gifted Education Act, which required that TAG students be identified and provided with appropriate educational programs or services. In 2001, Oregon reported spending $1.21 per TAG student. But then the 2001 legislature was forced to cut even that funding, and since then there has been no statewide funding for talented and gifted students at all. And I will refer to talented and gifted students as TAG students from now on. So Since then, no state money has gone to fund TAG education. Oregon's best and brightest students have been relegated to the most neglected corner of the classroom, and we have told them with our pocketbooks that their level of learning is simply not a priority for Oregon. Senate Bill 622 is an attempt to rectify that situation. As you have seen, the bill will create a full-time statewide TAG coordinator, as well as six regional planning committees whose job it will be to provide teachers with the resources they need to adequately educate our TAG children. In addition to hosting seminars and providing sample curricula, this bill asks these regional planning committees to be a source of support and inspiration for teachers who have never had experience teaching to a TAG child's level. You have heard, or you will hear from other people today, people who will be more directly affected by this bill than myself or anyone else in this building. I urge you to consider the vast return in terms of Oregon's brightest children on this small investment. I encourage you to send this bill with all of its amendments to the Senate floor and tell Oregon's brightest students that there is a place for them again in the classroom.
Thank you, Ms. Feathers. Any questions from the committee? Senator Metzger, I'm
yeah,
sure.
Just a couple of points, and thank you, Becca, for your testimony. And as you notice, both Senator Walker and Senator Morris and I are sponsors of this bill. And just for the committee's information, as Ms. Feathers brought this to me as we started legislative session, and you might be able to tell she was a TAG student herself, and that has actually caused me more grief in my my office. You know, and you're supposed to be smarter than your staff, and your staff keeps correcting you. But I think one of the things that's really important about not just this piece of legislation, but our whole discussion today, and I think Ms. Feathers really, really articulates this in the testimony, is we have all spent so much time on our educational system and trying to, you know, pull us back up and provide opportunities. And one of our famous phrases that we use over and over again is, you know, we've got to keep Oregon's best and brightest, blah, 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 you know, fill in the rest of the sentence. And then the reality is our best and our brightest were an investment of $1.21 at its heyday. You know, and now, as Becca pointed out, you know, zero. And I have heard, I believe, as many of you have heard, in your own district and from your own constituents, some very, very bright students. And, Madam Chair, we met one Southern Oregon University just 2 weeks ago, who are so bright, and rather than emphasize and help them to move further, it's like, well, you've already learned this stuff, and so we continue to work with everybody else until they finally lose interest in school. And I think one of the most alarming things I learned in looking at statistics about dropouts, this old adage that people are dropouts are people who just can't get it, and so they check out, and you find out that a lot of those are some of our brightest kids, and they've just they've given up on a school system that doesn't invest in them. And so I applaud the chair for taking this day and whatever we can do to really put some beginning steps back into our educational system to say our best and our brightest kids are going to get the same attention that we give everyone else, and that they are important, and they are an important part of our future, and that we want them to be invested in Oregon. And I appreciate, Becca, you brought this bill forward.
Yeah, I think Senator Metzger is exactly right. A couple of weeks ago, we took a joint committee down to Ashland, and this very bright young man, very bright and articulate, was speaking to the committee, and he said he dropped out of school in the ninth grade, I believe it was. And both Senator Metzger and I were sitting next to each other. Our clock started ticking in our heads, you know, like, wonder what's going on here. And so he asked the question, why did you drop out of school? And it's because the school couldn't keep up with him at all. He was bored. He was so far above the reading level of all the other kids that he just dropped out. Now he is working on his second master's. But he's homeless from time to time also. So it was really sad and energetic in a way, and we've both been working on seeing what we can do to make sure this young man continues to bring his intellect into the world in a way that he can have a home and he can do the things that he needs to do, because we can learn from him. So let me say that we've got some amendments here, Ms. Feathers. Can you tell us a little bit about what those amendments do? Certainly. Since you drafted them.
Mm-hmm. The Dash 1 amendments, which will remove Section 4 from the bill,
mm-hmm.
were at the request of some of the people that I spoke to when I was coming up with the concept for the bill, and they requested that I separate those elements which had fiscal impact from those elements which did not, in the hopes that even if the elements which had fiscal impact did not pass, that something could happen for TAG.
So we do still need the Dash 1 amendment.
I think the Dash 1 amendment is a valuable amendment simply because it's difficult for a statewide TAG coordinator, which is what we're hoping will happen with 622, to coordinate statewide TAG if they don't know what's happening with TAG in the state.
Okay. That's a little bit difficult to do, isn't it? We'll have the department talk about that.
They have more information.
I'm going to have them back clean up at the end of this and tell us why they're not able to do anything here. And the Dash 2, you want the Dash 1, and now you want the Dash 2 as well, and tell us a little bit more about the genesis of those.
Certainly. The Dash 2s are actually just some clarificatory language that was intended to be in the original bill and didn't quite make it in with the original draft.
Okay.
We wanted to specify a number amount so that the committee could actually look and see how very little we're asking for TAG. It's less than $1 million for the entire biennium, and to see where it was going. We wanted to clarify what we wanted the regional planning centers to do, because I'd had a lot of questions. Well, what will they come into the classroom and teach? Will they take teachers out of the classroom? What exactly is their purpose? So there you'll see some clarificatory language there. And then we wanted to specify that there would be a half-time employee at every regional planning center whose job it would be to coordinate the actual regional planning committee. In the past, and we had at one point regional planning centers like these that were run off of a federal grant, and there are other people testifying today who can speak in more detail about this. But at that time, the regional planning committee was entirely voluntary, and it, and there was no one to actually do the coordinating work for the committee. So we think that having this half-time employee to keep the records and be able to answer the phone when a teacher calls needing assistance will greatly benefit the committee's ability to help teachers around the state.
Great. Thank you. Any questions? Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I like in the Dash 2 the addition of ESDs. I think that's important and appropriate, seeing how they are more direct services to K-12 than the other folks. My question is basically, do you envision how these regions are going to be set up or structured, where are they going to be?
Obviously, in the end, it will be up to the Department of Education to decide where they will be. Originally, they were located at 6 Oregon universities: at Southern, Western, Eastern, OSU, U of O, and PSU. Between those six committees, they divided the state among themselves to decide which counties applied to which regional planning committee.
Okay, Madam Chair, I guess that will be a question I'll take to the department when they come up. So.
Yeah, they're not signed up to testify, but they will be testifying because I'll ask them to come up and talk about what we're discussing today. Okay, any other questions? Terrific. Thank you, Ms. Feathers. You did a great job. Okay, next we're going to hear from, I lost my note, Ms. DeLacy and I believe Ms. Livney. Yes. Yeah. Come on up.
Is 622 the one you want to move?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Those of you who don't know Ms. DeLacy, she has been one of the strongest advocates in the state for TAG and provided a real focal point for people when they don't know whom they don't know else to turn to. And Ms. Livney, we're about ready to find out who you are. I'm going to be delighted here. So would you like to start out?
Sure. Senator Walker. My name is Cheryl Ridney. I'm the Associate Vice Provost for the School of Extended Studies at Portland State University, and I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to testify. I personally support Senate Bill 622. Though we and other educational preparation programs believe we do a reasonably good job in preparing teachers, school counselors, administrators, there's no way in the limited time that we have to prepare these folks that we can provide them with all of the information that they need in order to be wonderful teachers for all of our students. Especially with the diversity of our student population and the current curriculum demands, that's very difficult. So one of the things that we are working on is, at that point, we can introduce and we can provide general information on a wide range of topics, but educators need more in-depth information once they're in the field. I don't have specific expertise in talented and gifted programs, but I have worked in adult education for 30 years, and 20 of those years have been with pre-K-12 educators. I have administered contracts and grants from the Oregon Department of Education in the area of talented and gifted education from 1991 to 2002, and we provided in-service training and professional development for, and the counties that we were responsible for through PSU were Clackamas, Hood River, Multnomah, Wasco, and Washington counties. So we coordinated one of the six regional planning groups. And it consisted of teachers, school district administrators, higher education faculty, parents of talented and gifted students, and gifted program coordinators. And they planned and implemented a variety of training sessions through a variety of models through that period. As you heard earlier, five other public institutions of higher ed coordinated the other groups. And we provided this type of professional development for over 10 years. In addition, Portland State, on a voluntary basis, has brought together TAG coordinators in the five counties for which we were responsible after the funding ended. And we were asked to do this by district personnel. So, and I can give you details on what the RPG did, the kinds of trainings, both statewide and through PSU, if you're interested in that. The current meetings are an opportunity for TAG specialists, including the person responsible for TAG from the Oregon Department of Ed, to share information about the implementation of the current TAG mandate, effective assessment and identification strategies and tests, available funding sources, programmatic and curriculum materials. And again, the coordinators of TAG in our area districts asked us to do this because they really had no other venue in which to share this kind of information. I fully support having a full-time person coordinating talented and gifted education in the state of Oregon. I've had experience with a positive impact on educators and therefore our pre-K-12 students that having a person at the Oregon Department of Ed can make. Currently, the FTE for a coordinator has shrunk to a few hours a week. And in the past, the coordinator, in collaboration with the people administering the RPGs, identified a cadre of experts in TAG from around the state who received in-depth training from national experts that they then shared with the folks in their geographic region. And for an example, just through PSU, we trained over 1,200 educators through workshops and short kinds of training, and over 300 teachers took courses in talented and gifted education through us. Therefore, I fully support having the six centers throughout the state also. In the past, we have found that professional development needs we identified included short and long-term training, courses, coaching, sharing curricular materials, discussing professional readings, and it varied by geographic location based on the resources that were available in that particular region. Every RPG set their own training agenda within the framework of a state theme. And this differed by location, again, based on the needs. Having a full-time person to coordinate the activities within each center would also ensure that educators receive effective training and TAG and that students benefit from that. One of the pieces, though, that is very critical, I think, is that these be funded. We have had an unfunded TAG mandate for many years, and you need money to administer these centers. You need money for substitute teachers, for presenters. I think we've just had an unfunded mandate too long. A major recommendation is that the six centers be part of a seamless system of professional preparation and professional development. This in-service training should build on the working of preparing institutions and provide input to those institutions so they can improve their teacher preparation programs. Higher ed and pre-K-12 should work together and learn from one another to improve both in pre-service and in-service for educators. In the spirit of a seamless system, I offer the following suggestion, and that be that in addition to centers be located at educational service districts, community colleges, or state institutions of higher ed, that they will work in collaboration with institutions of higher ed. And the rationale for this is, again, that we have a seamless process by providing a connection to pre-service education. And only institutions of higher ed can provide graduate credit for teachers that may want to take this as coursework. Thank you.
Okay. Any comments, questions? All right. Well, thank you, Ms. Lipnay. Those are really good points. Excuse me. Ms. DeLacy.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm afraid that I share something in common with you, Chair Walker, and we're both under the weather a bit today.
Oh.
So I'll try and be as
It's the gift that keeps on giving. We've all had it.
I'm afraid I probably did get it in sales.
This is my 15th day. I count them.
Oh, dear. Well, I'm
And every member of this committee but for our committee administrator and our assistant has been sick. All right. Well, hopefully you'll be able to give us some information today. I think you
can. I'll do my best.
All right.
I wanted to thank you, Madam Chair, and the members of the committee for holding a hearing on this very important topic. I know our parents are very grateful as well for this opportunity to talk to you about the problems that they've been experiencing. And I'd also like to say thank you to all of your legislative staff members who have really put in a huge amount of work. I know that you appreciate your staff members, but I think often members of the public don't realize how much they contribute to making our legislative process work. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Lacey, and I appreciate that you said that because we had a bill earlier this session where the callers and the emailers were just beating the heck out of my staff and some other staff, and I admonished them on the record and said that's not appropriate because these people do work hard, and you've seen that, so thank you.
I have certainly seen that. And I wanted to mention that there was somebody asked a question of Ms. Feathers about how the RPGs would be put together. And I also wanted to let the committee know that there's a House bill that would set up a TAG advisory committee, and that would be one of the duties for the House advisory, for the TAG advisory committee if that House bill goes through.
Okay.
I don't have the number right here in front of me, but I do have it in my papers, and I'd be happy to provide that to you.
Okay.
For the record, my name is Margaret DeLacy. I live in Portland, and I'm testifying on behalf of the Oregon Association for Talented and Gifted, which is a nonprofit membership organization. I'm just going to set the scene a little bit, provide you with some background, and then let other people fill in a little bit more of the detail. So I want to start with some general facts about gifted education. These are research-based facts. The first thing I want to say is that gifted education is not elitist. It's a very common myth. Most gifted students do not come from wealthy families, and giving children a chance to learn does not make them feel superior to others. They do not lose the ability to feel concern for others when their own needs are met. They have done research looking at the attitude that gifted students in special programs have, and there's no evidence that this builds that kind of attitude in those students. Second, gifted children don't teach themselves. They do not succeed on their own. I've talked to several of you, and I've shared information that shows that, in fact, our high-achieving and gifted students, and in our gifted program, we identify both high-achieving and gifted students, tend to make lower learning gains than other students. The reason is that they're not receiving the targeted teaching that is necessary for their for them to make gains. Gifted students need instruction at an appropriate level for their level of mastery. And when they're sprinkled evenly across classrooms, they tend to make lower learning gains than their other classmates because the instruction is not adapted to their needs. Gifted students are especially, gifted programs are especially critical for low-income and minority gifted students who tend to make even lower gains than their majority classmates. Northwest Evaluation Associates has done a major study of this across the country, and they found that there's an achievement gap at every achievement point. It doesn't go away at high achievement levels. Low-income and minority students are more likely to be assigned to struggling schools that are more preoccupied with meeting the No Child Left Behind goals, and hence are even more likely to be neglected than your average gifted student, if you can describe any of these students as average. Gifted students benefit from inexpensive educational options such as acceleration and advanced classes. Providing these services in no way harms any other students in a school or community. And in fact, studies have shown some benefit to these students when programs like this are in a school. A lack of these options for appropriate instruction can cause very serious social and emotional problems for gifted students when they're assigned at random to classrooms where they have a hard time finding other students who can understand their jokes and share their interests. They tend to feel alienated and isolated. The most gifted students have been found to experience severe clinical depression as a result. It's not uncommon for these students to check out, in other words, to drop out mentally, to drop out physically, to act out, or to have problems with depression or other at-risk behaviors. That's what really got me involved in this as a mother, was the damage I was seeing our current programs doing to children all over the district. Some of you as legislators might be more concerned with the economic impacts that neglecting these children have, but ignoring them in the classroom is not a harmless policy. It does actual damage to their development as well as to their intellectual progress. Services to high-achieving students are, in fact, an essential component of economic development in Oregon. I won't go through the hundreds of comments that you've received from business groups about the value of K-12 in general. I have a couple of quotations in here about the need for world-class education. We cannot provide a world-class education if we don't provide advanced classes for students who are high-achieving students. Our children are simply not being prepared to compete on a world-class basis with other countries that are providing this kind of instruction to their students. Other thing I wanted to point out to you is that services to students in rural development, rural areas, is as important a piece of economic development as services to urban students. A report from the U.S. Department of Agriculture in 2005 pointed out that in rural areas, they found the higher the level of educational attainment, the faster the growth rates in both per capita income and employment. Oregon is a rural state as well as an urban state, and we don't want to leave those students behind either. Gifted students absolutely have to have well-trained teachers to be successful. A big study in Tennessee carried out by Dr. Sanders, who developed the growth-based assessment system, found that only the top fifth of all teachers are effective in producing learning gains in the top fifth of students. Yet Oregon teachers have no required pre-service training, pre-licensure training on effective research-based ways to meet the instructional needs of TAG students. Senate Bill 622 at least makes a start towards addressing that need by rebuilding the regional planning groups that used to provide professional development for teachers after they've received their licenses. I agree with Ms. Livnia that we also need to provide better pre-service education, and OTAG has been working on that for quite a while. TAG has been an afterthought at the Department of Education. Our TAG specialist is only 0.3, but she serves about 40,000 students and their families and advises our nearly 200 school districts. A lack of leadership at the state level was one of the biggest issues that was identified by parents, teachers, administrators, and principals when the Department of Education held statewide input sessions in 2004. Today, our TAG system is entirely complaint-driven because our TAG specialist doesn't have an opportunity to work proactively with so little time allocated to that job. To provide more leadership and to be proactive, our TAG specialist needs more time and also access to district TAG plans. This is covered in Senate Bill 312, so you can consider that to be my testimony on Senate Bill 312. Okay. Oregon TAG programs lag way behind those provided by many of our other states. Oregon state spending on TAG has dropped from the $1 million that we started with, I believe that was a federal grant, to about $100,000 per year, $200,000 per biennium for the past, for the decade until 2002, and then to zero after the special session in 2002. Today we have no state spending on TAG at all. In 2004, among 20 states that reported both the number of identified TAG students and their total spending, I added Oregon in there because I happen to know our total number of students and our total spending, the average spent was $244 per student. If Oregon funded TAG at this level, it would allocate about $20 million per biennium to TAG services. There's a huge variation in state districts, among school districts in the state, and the extent to which they provide services to students. You can have children born almost next door to each other who happen to be in different districts. One will get nothing in the way of TAG services, and the district will have no TAG funding. The district next door might provide $1,000 or more per student and a fairly adequate array of classes, and I think that in the name of equity, we need to do something about the situation and make sure that all of our students have these opportunities. I did bring in an old table on TAG expenditures by districts in the state of Oregon from 1999 to 2003, and it shows that the spending among the districts has either held steady or dropped considerably, whereas spending on other special populations has increased dramatically in that period. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I'd be, as long as my voice lasts, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Lacey. Any questions from the committee? Senator Metzger.
Well, just an observation on your testimony. Thank you very much. I think you really bring home the issue in all the categories that you have brought to us today. And I think the final one, again, I think building on the testimony that we've had previous, you know, is really revealing. And, you know, we always talk about our priority, you know, where we spend our money shows where our priorities are. And to think that we our state emphasis on talented and gifted is zero. I mean, $0. You know, when you have an average of $244 and we're zero, tells us where our priorities are. And I really, really appreciate, you know, putting it in that form and while recognizing that we have some districts that are doing the best with their limited resources to try and make up for that. But without leadership at the state level, it does, I'm sure, beg the question in many districts as to, you know, where is our emphasis here. So thank you for your testimony. That's very, very helpful, and we're going to correct that.
Madam Chair, Senator Metzger, I'd just like to point out that in the packets that were distributed, and I believe some of you have seen these before, there is a table of TAG spending by states for you to look at.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that 12 states reported spending more than $10 million on TAG per year. This is just the states that provided information concerning both their enrollment and their total state spending to the National Association of Gifted Children. Some states reported their spending and not their enrollment, so I couldn't work out a per capita spending, so they're not in this table. But we have about half the states here.
I see Guam is way ahead of us.
Yeah. And Oklahoma, once again, they send their children to school at age 5. And we had a bill earlier, I think it's up on the floor today, to lower the age, compulsory education age from 7 to 6. And we had lots of folks upset about that. And here's Oklahoma sending their kids to school at age 5. And they also have a huge investment in TAG. Any other questions? Okay. I'm sorry. Thank you. And I wish you well in your recovery. All right. We're going to hear from some parents and students. Then we'll hear from the school boards and the school administrators. And then we'll hear from the department. So let's start out with the parents. And I constantly am misplacing my information. David Kay and his son, David, are you here? You want to come up?
Actually, it's Roland will be is the one who's testifying, and I'm just going to be here for any questions and
okay. Just have a seat and tell us both who you are, and if you're just the potted plant, that's okay.
David Case, Creswell, from Creswell Public School District. We had a little early start this morning to get him here.
Oh yes, you did. Thank you.
I'm from Crest Lane Elementary, and I'm in the 9.
You're 9, and what's your first name, sweetie?
Roland Case.
Roland Case. Okay.
Hello, my name is Roland Case. I am 9 years old, and I have lived in the small community of Creswell all my life. In fact, I am a 6th generation Creswellian. Before I was officially identified as a TAG student, I skipped the first grade, hoping that I would be more challenged in the second. By the time I reached the third, I was very bored, anxious, and becoming very disinterested in my schoolwork due to the fact that I was not being challenged. I tended to get into trouble. I was frustrated by the work that was being presented to me. I would finish it quickly and then sit around waiting for the rest of the class to finish. Currently, I'm in the 4th grade and attend Crest Lane Elementary School in the mornings, where I participate in reading, writing, music, P.E., recess, and lunch. In the afternoons, I am bused to the Creswell Middle School, where I take both 6th and 7th grade science, pre-algebra, and algebra. Although I realize that I am different, I have adapted well to the schedule. Oftentimes, I miss out on elementary school activities such as fun Fridays or holiday activities that occur in the afternoon due to the fact that I must be at the middle school. I've taken advantage of the middle school activities such as chess club and the upcoming talent show. I played competitive chess for the Creswell High School JV team. I ended my season 6-1. I took 2nd place in the league for total JV points. Unfortunately, I cannot attend the state tournament due to the fact that I am 9 years old. At the end of the month, I'll be participating in the National Middle School Chess Tournament in Sacramento. In addition to my public school education, I have also studied piano and Chinese for the past 4 years. Socially, I prefer to play with my elementary school friends. My hobbies include ice hockey, basketball, baseball, video games, Pokemon, and Yu-Gi-Oh! I relate very well to my age peers. I do not expect them to be like me. They accept me for my differences, just how, like, I accept them for theirs. I look at my high IQ of 156 as simply something that God made me good at, just like how some of my friends are really gifted at sports. I have several friends in my elementary school class who have also been identified as TAG students, yet I am the only one whose parent pursued an alternative education plan to better suit my needs. I am very lucky to have a family who values education and have raised me to see the advantages of getting a quality education. Although I am adjusting well to the bouncing between schools, I know that many of my fellow TAG friends would be very scared to be in a classroom with older kids. I've had parents ask me to try and talk their children into considering taking a class or two at the middle school. I would like to ask you to please consider funding tag programs in all schools across Oregon to help kids like me and my friends to be the best we can be. It's unfortunate that our potential is not being maximized. We need to be educationally groomed so that we can someday grow up, choose occupations that will make a difference and possibly change the world.
Yeah. Roland, did you write that testimony yourself?
Well, me and my parents kind of did it.
Okay. Well, I think your parents just probably helped a teeny bit, because it sounds like you don't need a lot of help. That was incredible testimony. What I took from that, I took many things, but one of the things that struck me is that you said you still like to play with your friends and do things with your friends socially.
Mm-hmm.
And I was glad to hear that, because one of the concerns I have when they advance young students like you into the higher grades, you might not be ready to play with them, you know, in a social interaction. Mm-hmm. But you're far more advanced intellectually. And so it's good to hear that you still want to play like a 9-year-old, even though your brain is far ahead of your 9-year-old social skills. So you still like all the things that other 9-year-olds like to do, right?
Almost everything, yeah. Like, a lot of 9-year-olds wouldn't play ice hockey, but
well,
it's just something that's it's different than a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also I'll give you a little secret. Piano is my favorite instrument, and my daughter played piano from age 5 all the way through high school. And at one point she wanted to stop playing because she just wanted to do other things. But I started paying her money to learn songs. And so I'm just going to give your parents a little tip. I had her put a little tip jar out on the piano, and I would lay down on the sofa and go to sleep to her music, and it was a great way to relax. And so it got her re-energized. But Mr. Rollin, parent, I'll let you know, I started out offering her $20, and she learned the song so quick I dropped it quickly. But it was a nice way for her to earn a living. So thank you, Roland. Any questions from the committee? Senator Morse?
Just a request, Madam Chair. If you could provide us a copy of your testimony, it would be appreciated. Thank you.
Okay. In closure, and I appreciate so much Chair Walker and members of the committee that, you know, acceleration, I think, is really important, but it shouldn't be we live in a rural school district in Creswell, and our TAG coordinator is also the principal that has no time truly to devote towards the needs of the TAG kids. The easy solution was to get the middle school principal involved and come up with a plan that he goes to school a little bit later because their first period class is math in his fourth grade class, and then he takes the important classes and recess and things like that in PE at the elementary school. But then they provide transportation to the middle school, which is only 3 blocks away, but they accept the liability of and keep them under the umbrella and transportation. But some of the things, you know, in his algebra class and whatnot that he overhears, you know, it's just not appropriate. They've been so wonderful. They're trying. It's just that I don't think that acceleration should be the only answer. I think accelerating one grade for him was nice, but, you know, socially, but academically, it's still not enough. And we really need these the TAG programs to be at the school district level. I mean, I know they're mandated already. I saw the administrator's toolkit that the Oregon Department of Education has provided available to the school districts. I don't see them being in use. The mandating is not being enforced, and I want to be careful because I want his experience at his school. They've done so much for him in comparison to some other TAG kids and school districts, but I still feel like they need to provide something specifically at the elementary school for kids like like Rollin. And there's other kids that the parents aren't, they don't want to be the voice, and they're not stepping out and advocating as strongly as they really should because they don't want to, they don't want to get involved with the politics, which can be, you know, at the school level, which it's a sensitive, it's a very sensitive subject. So thank you so much. If you have any questions, I'd...
Well, you're welcome, Mr. Kay. And you're right. It's I have a friend who has a TAG son, and she's sort of been labeled in the district now as a problem parent because she wants more for her child. So she finally took him out of public school and put him in private school because she just couldn't fight with the school district anymore. And that really shouldn't be the answer for parents. You know, and I applaud you for really working on an alternative education plan for your son. And the South Lane School District, I think your superintendent was just given the award of superintendent in the nation.
Nationally, yes.
Yeah, so you do have a school district that seems real intent on...
It's a Cottage Grove. It's just,
oh, that's
it's just South
Cottage Grove.
Yes.
So you're not in the South Lane.
No. We're in South Lane County, but we're Creswell School District, and she was she's Cottage Grove School District.
Okay. Well,
superintendent.
I think it's close enough anyway.
They're neighbors.
It's rubbing off. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate hearing from you. Rollin, I appreciate that you took time out of school today to come up here, and you just look dynamite in a suit. So I thank you very much, and I hope you can write a paper about your experience here today.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to hear from another parent and children, I believe. Susan Love, do you have a group with you?
My son isn't here
today. Okay. Well, come on. We can't hear you off the record here, so you can tell us about that in a moment. And then I think there's Larissa Pavlik. Are you here, Larissa? Okay, why don't you come up at the same time? Yeah, there's room for three people. I don't have the third person on my list, but that doesn't mean anything.
This is Michelle Pavlik.
Oh, okay.
She's a mom.
Okay.
So,
yeah. Great. Okay, well, Susan, I called you up first, so why don't you start out?
That's fine.
State your name for the record for us.
Thank you, Chair Walker and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Susan Love, and I am a resident of Salem, Oregon. My husband and I are parents of a 14-year-old TAG student who attends a high school here in Salem, and he would have loved to have come today, but he is busy with an exam, so he wasn't able to come. So with my notes, you have an attached letter that he wrote to Senator Winters with his concerns in regards to TAG. I have come to speak today in support of Senate Bill 622. Our son attended public school through fourth grade. We elected to homeschool him during his fifth grade year through this fall when he began ninth grade. We were concerned that he would drop out within the walls of the classroom as he began his middle school years. Fortunately, my husband and I were able to adjust our family schedule in order to accommodate our son's educational needs. I basically became a taxi service for our son, driving him around to things that he needed to go to. During this time, he continued to attend orchestra at the middle school, and in his eighth grade year, I drove him up to the high school so that he could take an upper-level math class in German 1. He was very excited to attend classes up at the high school, and I can clearly remember the excitement he shared with my husband and I as he poured through the registration bulletin that he received at the high school. I mean, he was going through this and circling classes that he was going to take and marking things with post-it notes. It was the educational candy box that he had been waiting to open. He couldn't wait until his official freshman year up at the high school when he could begin taking all the classes he was drooling over in the bulletin. And so the curriculum fair at the high school was announced and our family attended. Our son would soon be able to open that enticing box of courses. The box that to this point in time had read, wait until next year. So he ripped off the lid and read, sorry, you'll need to wait till next year. Because, unfortunately, this past fall, the way the core curriculum courses for freshmen students would be offered would change. Separate honors classes for freshmen would no longer be available. Instead, students could earn honors credit within the regular classroom. We became concerned, how would high-ability students be able to interact with each other in the way they had in the past? What curriculum would they be using? So our family and others began scrambling. Once again, we felt the stress of being in the public school system. We struggled with the old thoughts of why do parents have to fight for the 40,000 identified tag students for appropriate level of education on a daily basis in the classroom. And so this is why I have come today to speak in support of Senate Bill 622. This population of students and their families need to have a full-time tag specialist at the ODE, the six regional planning centers, and school districts to be required to submit to the superintendent of public instruction written plans of instruction for TAG children, which is in 312, I believe. These students and their families deserve to have individuals who possess expertise in the field of gifted education working with them and teaching others about these talented individuals. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning. And if I can answer a question, I will try.
All right.
So, yeah.
Thank you, Ms. Love. We'll go ahead and hear from the rest of the panel, and then we'll open it up to questions. Okay. Larissa, are you next?
Yeah.
Is your mom the potted plant?
Okay. Well, she can talk a little bit. She wants to.
Well, we really like hearing from the young people who experience this every day in their lives. So tell us who you are and then give us your story.
Chair Walker, members of the committee, my name is Larissa Pavlik and I am from Salem, Oregon. I am a fifth-generation Oregonian and in the eighth grade at a Salem middle school. I work hard in school and get good grades. I am the piano player for the concert choir and the jazz band, and I play the French horn in the symphonic band at my school. I participated in the All-State and All-City Honor Middle School bands. Last summer, I participated in a high school marching band. I am also a peer helper at my school. I am speaking as one of the 40,000 Oregon TAG students in support of the two TAG bills that are being voted on. I like to be challenged in school, and my favorite classes are the ones I have to work hard in. The classes I don't like as much, I can easily say, are the ones that I don't have to work very hard in. And the only thing that's stopping me from going to private school is the music program and all my friends and public school. I have some friends that are TAG students that would like to be challenged too. These bills will help my school learn about ways to challenge TAG students and make my school career more fun. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. I will be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Larissa. Any questions from the committee? Do you feel that the school district is meeting your needs right now?
I don't. I mean, one class, the whole day, I feel like I'm being challenged in, and the other ones, no. And math is one of them that I'm not being challenged in.
Mm-hmm. So you sit there and you're bored, and
yeah.
And we heard Roland, he sort of got in trouble a little bit when he had time on his hands, and I mean, you could easily do that, but you just take your mind somewhere else out of the classroom.
I either do homework from another class or I read a book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask the two parents something, and Ms. Pavlik, you'll have to state who you are on the record first. But let me ask you, did you get labeled to be as problem parents in the district as well?
Yeah. Yes, we have. This is Michelle Pavlik, and I'm Larissa's mom. And I've been kind of a quiet tag parent for all these years, and then when the high school decided to eliminate the honors classes for freshmen, it was very hard for us because Larissa will be going to high school next year, and we've met with the district staff and with the high school staff trying to explain to them why these students need the advanced coursework. And we've gone to many meetings, written many, many emails and letters, and it actually has made me realize how things could just be eliminated for these kids without any leadership at the state level or even our district level. And so that's kind of, you know, I've been quiet for a long time and patient. Our kids have been patient. And we got to the point where it was time for high school, and like Sue is saying, that all of a sudden they would be allowed to take classes at their level, at a more advanced level, that go faster, and then all of a sudden they were taken away without really any input from the community. Mm-hmm. So I get a little emotional when I talk about it. Well, we're here for our kids. We're not here for ourselves.
I don't blame you, and I think one of the problems we have is that school districts are so focused on filling the requirements of No Child Left Behind, and they don't have enough money to do it.
Right.
And so they look to eliminate those programs that impact the fewest children, and mm-hmm. I think you're one of those. And unfortunately, 40,000 is not a small number, and they're spread out all across the state, but... I think it's time to reinvest in our students here, and it starts with these TAG students.
Mm-hmm. And the program at the high school put all of the kids at any level of education in the same class. And I actually work in special education, and I don't see how that is going to help the kids at either end of the spectrum, because you've got the lower level students that are trying to learn at a higher level, maybe than they're ready to. And so I have questioned how is it really helping the low end as well to really get what they need. I've seen kids at the low end bored and who have behavior problems as well.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Love, you had a comment?
Yeah, I just, Chairman Walker and members of the committee, this year what we did for our son was we gave it a week and a half at the beginning of the school year for him with these core curriculum classes where all the kids were together. That would have been 20th Century Studies, English, and Science. And after a week and a half, we elected together as a family to take both his English, the literature, language arts, and science online. Because mm-hmm. it was just incredible what was not occurring in the classroom. And I didn't find out half of it until he said to me in the car, "Mom, I'm really glad that I'm not in the English class anymore because the teacher's having students read out loud and kids are not pronounced." And he wasn't making fun of these kids. He said, "They're embarrassed. They're reading really slow, and I'm reading ahead." And this was going on, and it was still going on. And then for writing, they were writing these chunk paragraphs where they'd write one sentence in one color ink and the next two sentences in another color ink. And I, as a parent, was concerned about this because he needed to be in writing class that he was really going ahead, and this was going to stop him from working where he needed to be. So, mm-hmm. And the science was kind of the same thing. He's had classes down at OSU during the summer, and so not college level, but for TAG students.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was very frustrating. He's still in the 20th Century Studies. His teacher has really worked with us and emailed us right at the beginning of the year and said, "I'm really sorry, but your son knows everything I'm going to cover in this class this year." And so we need to work together, which is wonderful.
Yeah, that's
so
great.
Thank
Any
you.
Any other questions? All right, thank you. Thank you so much. And Melissa, thank you for being so involved in music and all the other things that you do. We appreciate uh-huh. that.
Thank you, Chair Walker and members
yeah,
of the committee.
Thank you.
We really appreciate you letting us speak. It feels very good to be able to do
yeah.
that, so thank
yeah.
you.
And if we have anything to say about it, I don't think we're going to put one more thing in the statute that isn't funded. So, but I'll tell you that when this one of these bills, whatever bill leaves this committee, has to go down to the Ways and Means Committee, because it'll have to be funded. Mm-hmm. Senator Morse and I both serve on that committee. So we'll be able to talk about the testimony we've heard today, and there'll be another opportunity for that as well.
Thank you.
Very thank you very
yeah,
much.
Thank you. Okay, I'd like to hear from Chuck Bennett and Jim Green, and then we'll hear from the department. We've got 15 minutes left allocated for our discussion today on these two bills. I'll bet you guys can take about five, and then we'll let the department finish up.
Madam Chair, thank you for allowing us to testify. Jim Green with the Oregon School Boards Association, and I'll lead off today. My history with the issue of the tag issue goes back to when I first started at the Oregon School Boards Association 15 years ago. I got an amendment put in a bill that the department brought, and all I did was change one word in the tag statute. School districts shall provide talented and gifted, switched it to may. I didn't know the wrath that I brought down on myself from folks around the state on what we were doing with that. But actually what we wanted to do was bring the Department of Education to the table, because at that time, and I think the folks in the back of the room will agree with this, the administrative rules related to TAG, talented and gifted in the state, were found in Division 22 and I believe Division 19 and Division 27 of the Oregon Administrative Rules, and districts and parents didn't know what they had to do with regard to talented and gifted. We support the Talented and Gifted program, and what we were able to do back in the 93 session was bring folks to the table and say, what is it you want us to do, and what do we have to do with the Department of Education? How does that relate to these two bills? I can talk about Senate Bill 312 first, and to be honest with you, we don't support Senate Bill 312, because all that does is require us to file one more thing with the Department of Ed, and our school districts have told us enough is enough. In particular, the fact that you don't have anybody over at the Department of Ed to look at 197 reports related to talented and gifted. And our small school districts are just saying, we've got enough. And you've hit the nail on the head, Madam Chair, where you said, you know, districts have had to take a look at their funding. They haven't been able to do it. I think one of the ladies who testified earlier said, look, our principal is our TAG teacher in our school and our TAG coordinator. You know, one of the things I would say as it relates to Senate Bill 622, and I want to thank Becca Feathers from Senator Metzger's office. She called Chuck and I and said, come up and talk to me about this bill. And we support the bill with the Dash 1 and the Dash 2 amendments. We think you ought to have a funded position at the Department of Ed, and we think you ought to fund these six regional centers around the state. And to be honest with you, it was a great meeting. She took all the concerns and comments and put those amendments forward, and we support the bill with the Dash 1 and the Dash 2 amendments. But if I had to put the blame on somebody for what's gone on with talented and gifted in the state, I've got to put it on your folks' feet. You have not funded schools adequately to do this. You created the TAG mandate, and you haven't funded it. And the chart they handed you shows what happens when you decrease funding in schools. And it has a dramatic impact on what goes on with talented and gifted. It has a dramatic impact on what we do with the rest. Because if you take a look at the biggest dip we had in funding, what happened then? That's when you called us back into five special sessions and cut school funding each time. We think you ought to fund this program. Make it valuable and make it meaningful for kids. And that's what the program should look like. If you fund it adequately and you fund the position at the Department of Ed and you fund those six regional centers around the state, we think then it'll have some meaning, because you look at rate and level of learning for kids. We don't have the resources in our school district to do that. Each time the legislature meets, and you're going to hear more bills later today that put additional things on school districts. Assessments for PE that we're going to have to do. A PE mandate. You know, one of the things, and I think, Madam Chair, you said it, we're not going to send things out if we don't fund it. And we're going to hold your feet to the fire on that. And I think the parents from OTAG would support us in this. If you want to make this program meaningful and you want to make it important for kids, you need to fund the program. A first step would be to do what 622 with the Dash 1s and Dash 2s do, which shows there'll be leadership from the Department of Education on this issue, and we'll create six regional programs around the state that will give school districts help and aid in creating their TAG programs. You've got to have that, because you heard from a parent today, again, who said, our principal's our TAG coordinator. We don't have the resources in the school districts to do this, and unfortunately, we've got to look back to you and say, you got to fund it if you want us to do it.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Mr. Bennett.
Madam Chair, my name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. I would just second Mr. Green's comments and also thank Becca from Senator Metzger's office for the work she did with us on proposed amendments to this bill. We also support it with the Dash 1 and Dash 2 amendments. Particularly want to underscore one of the amendments in the Dash 2 that adds Education Service Districts as one of the providers of the six regional centers. I think Mr. Green has really hit the nail on the head. The issue, as always, in education or virtually any other government program is not willingness, it's funding. And the willingness is out there. The desire to provide these programs is out there. But as you hear the description from parents and students of who's running these talented and gifted programs that do exist barely in our public schools, it's often someone with a whole range of additional responsibilities that tend to attract their attention during the day and don't allow for the kind of focus on these really important programs. So, again, the proposal to fund this with $860,000 of new money from the general fund just adds to the, I think, the underscoring by the legislature, if this should pass, of the importance you place on it. You've not only said we want to have the centers, we want to have the programs, you've also said we're willing to pay for it, and that, I think, is just essential. So thank you.
You're welcome. And you're right. I mean, I'm hopeful that we can pass these bills out, or one of them, and then when it comes to our Ways and Means Committee, that we're serious about it, because it's ridiculous to have a program and not fund it and not help these people make contributions to our community, which they all want to do.
And Madam Chair, I would underscore the fact that, you know, while it's only $800,000, there is symbolism that goes along with having a position at the Department of Ed that is dedicated to this. You've got 197 school districts out there who are scrambling to provide these services, and they try to call the Department of Ed to get help, and it's one-third of an FTE currently over there. And they need somebody at the Department of Ed that they can contact to give them best practices on how to address the rate and level of learning of these students who, as you've heard, we may not be meeting right now in our school districts, and we want to. I don't know what the Department of Ed's going to step up here and say, but I can tell you from our school district's perspective, the symbolism of having that person there and funding it and being a resource and creating these six regional centers will go a long way to help school districts provide these services.
Okay, great. Thank you both. Oh, Senator Morris has a question.
Well, a comment, if I may. There isn't a day go by in this process, in this building, that doesn't remind me of the structural problems that we have funding the most critical services. With Measure 5, the downslide from Measure 5 has put Oregon in a place where we're literally mired in a minimalist approach to education. And the root cause of this stems back to initiative process and a revenue system that does not produce the resources that are needed to meet the demands of our education system in particular. And this discussion, I believe, should remind us of how do we solve the problem systemically to provide adequate funding for these most critical services. And getting that discussion going in this building is very difficult. But it's one, this is just another classic example of what we need to be doing and we're not doing. And that's, friends, it's called tax reform.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Morris. I appreciate giving the opportunity to you to talk about that every chance we get. And you're right. You're right. All right. Thanks, gentlemen. Okay, the department, would you please step up? I've got Andrea Morgan and Morgan Allen. Andrea Morgan, Morgan Allen. This isn't that, what do they call that, a palindrome or something like that? I can't.
More confusion than
I bet. Okay, now we're off schedule, but...
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Morgan Allen, Legislative Director for the Department of Education, and I'll turn it over to Andrea, who, no relation, but a good last name, who can answer your questions and talk about what's going on. She's passing out sort of our TAG program brief. But to speak to Senate Bill 622 specifically today, I just wanted to note for the record that the department requested in our agency request budget to the governor, we requested a full FTE for TAG, recognizing that we have about one-third of a person, although Andrea is actually a whole person, she spends about one-third of her time working on TAG programs. So we do recognize the need of the department and understand that there's a need out there to do this. And we are supportive of both the Dash 1 and Dash 2 amendments and appreciate when the legislature asks us to do something and provides us the funding. I had a chance to speak with Ms. Feathers from Senator Metzger's office, and I know the superintendent spoke to Senator Metzger about these bills, and we just wanted to note for the record that we are supportive. And it's also understanding that when Senate Bill 622 goes down to the Ways and Means process, that you guys will be advocating to add a new position to our department to fund that 1.0 FTE. My understanding from Ms. Feathers and Cindy Henn, the legislative council, was they couldn't put both of those elements into the bill as it's written. So I will turn that, with that being said, I'll turn it over to Andrea to answer any of your questions, and we'll go from there.
Okay, great. Yeah, I don't think we're interested in asking you to do this without funding it, because we'd like to make you a whole person. Ms. Morgan, so state your name, please.
For the record, I'm Andrea Morgan. I'm an education specialist for the Oregon Department of Education.
Okay, and tell us any information about what you do with your one-third FTE time.
With my one-third FTE, I think we list many of the activities within the program brief. And honestly, I think there have been some changes over the years, and some of them have allowed us to work a little smarter rather than harder, or at least has made it easier. The new data collection, for instance, has given the TAG specialist, the point three position, a little more breathing space to work on other projects, simply because we don't have to spend the time contacting individual districts on our own to get the data. Today it's part of an individual student collection, and it allows us to get a clearer picture on the number of students, their identifications, their ethnicity. We can disaggregate the data quite well because it is part of the individual student collection. For the last 2 years, we've had this opportunity, and of course we're working the bugs out of it. We're finding that there were some data systems that didn't allow us to get the information easily. But it, for the most part, that has made it so there is more time to deal with some of the other issues. You'll see, according to this, I have been working with the regional planning groups, as Ms. Livney talked about. I've been working with that group, and I attend their meetings and hopefully provide support to those, support to the professional organizations, as it's been requested, to speak, to provide information, the things that they have wanted. I provide technical assistance to schools and districts. I've actually gone out to districts and provided training. I also work on an individual basis, taking phone calls. I've done some of the work by video conference rather than doing it on site, which has really been efficient because it eliminates, for instance, when I went down to North Douglas School District, it eliminated a two-hour drive on both ends so that I could really spend the time by video conference talking with the district, working with them, and then be able to get back to my desk and get to work on other issues. I've been working on district compliance. We have some complaints against districts, and I've been working on those issues with the districts, those that have been found out of compliance, and for parents who are willing to make formal complaints against their districts so that I can go in and work on that. And, of course, I've been working on legislative support. There are a lot of TAG bills this session, and each of those come to my desk for analysis and review. So those are the kinds of things I've been working on. Besides the projects, on effective practices and models, about 3 years ago, 4 years ago, we did a massive curriculum project called Challenging High-End Learners. We have since revised that because we trained Oregon teachers very well. And if you aren't teaching to the standards, or if it doesn't match the standards, they're reluctant to use the materials. Well, standards had changed in math and English language arts, and so they were more reluctant to use the lessons in challenging high-end learners. We brought in panels of educators, updated them to the standards, made sure they matched to the new standards, and we were also able to extend the lessons, the 60 lessons that serve as models for teachers. We extended those lessons to have applications to the arts, which we know are very important for gifted students. And so we were actually able to make it into a living document, one that will continue to be worked on and provide more guidance to districts. And I think also then updating the administrator's handbook and making it very clear. There had been some terms that were used about the director of TAG and some other things. Directors are a definite role in our hierarchy. I'm not a director. So we've made some facelift kinds of changes, but also spelling out very clearly what district obligations are according to rule and law.
Okay. Any questions from the committee? Sounds like you're doing a lot with your one-third time, but clearly it's not enough to help the 40,000 TAG students in our state, so it would be nice if we could put you back together as a whole person.
Senator Walker, Chair Walker, I think that we're doing a lot with the resource we have, which mm-hmm. is a much. It would be great to be able to do more.
Mm-hmm.
But the other part to recognize is that it's also one that it's all levels need to be fully active in this activity.
Mm-hmm. I agree. All right. Senator Metzger.
Thank you. Just a comment. First of all, as was mentioned in the testimony, I did meet with Superintendent Castile yesterday, and she did... as you noted, express her strong support for the legislation. And I think one thing, too, for this is, I think, more for those in the audience and those out in TV land who may be watching this hearing this morning, is one thing that is, I think, really, really important and that we've done in the legislature, particularly this session, I think it started last session, but more stronger this session, is to include our substantive people on the Ways and Means process. When I came in the legislature, the Ways and Means is the budgeting process. These are the policy committees, and never the twain should meet. And I remember serving on Ways and Means as a freshman, and I was wondering, you know, this is such a disconnect between the policy and then I just try to fund it. And the fact that Chairman Walker and Senator Morris are both on the funding committee where this bill goes, I think, is that continuity we need so we understand that policy. And and I have spoken with the big kahuna, Senator Schrader, about these bills as well. So I think that really, for those of you who have done such yeoman's work in advocating for your kids and for the kids of the state, that's the kind of continuity that we've kind of built into that system. And so we have the accountability not only on the policy level, but then on the funding level when the bills come down. So just wanted to make that comment and really, really appreciate that we have these two very, very talented people that will be serving on the Ways and Means process as well.
Great. Thank you, Senator Metzger. I have a question. The department asked for funding for full-time FTE, but did that make the governor's recommended budget?
Chair Walker, members of the committee, we did ask for a full FTE in our agency request budget, and it was not included in the governor's recommended budget.
Okay, so it's our job to stick it back in. Okay, great. Thank you. All right, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bills 312 and 622. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 622.
Madam Chair, I move the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 622.
Senator Cruz moves the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 622. Any questions, comments? No objection, so ordered.
Madam Chair, I move the -2 amendment to Senate Bill 622.
Senator Cruz moves the -2 amendment to Senate Bill 622. Any comments, discussion? And no objection, hearing none, so ordered.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 622 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 622 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Any comments, questions, colleagues?
Appreciate your leadership on this whole issue, Chairman Walker.
Well, and the leadership of your office and your staff has been incredible, and the testimony today, it's just really, I think, made a strong impact here with us that this is a critical program and it needs to be funded. Senator Morris, you have any comments about that?
Let's go.
Okay, cool. All right. Let's take the roll call, Ms. Gravel, so that you can hear your voice today.
Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Senator Moore?
Aye.
Senator Westling?
Yeah, he's excused.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Chair Walker?
Aye. And I'll just make the comment that Ms. Livnay had made a small recommendation, and we'll take that up down in Ways and Means on the bill. It was not a significant issue, and I didn't want to hold the bill up today. So I'm an aye. With that, we'll send this bill down to the committee, and Senator Morse, you and I are going to have to be strong advocates. All right, here we go. I'm going to close the work session. Thank you all. All right. We are moving along. We've got a number of work sessions, and I think we can tap those out as soon as I clear my deck of all this paper. Great, thank you. We're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 372. We have an amendment. Ms. Richardson, tell us about this.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 372 adds physical education to the list of subjects in the statewide assessment system and to the subjects for the Certificate of Initial Mastery. It deletes physical education from the subjects that students may receive a subject area endorsement in. If I could note for the committee, when we last met on this bill, the Dash 1 amendments were adopted as a clarification about the physical education and clearly removing it from the subject area endorsement piece. The Dash 2s require statewide implementation of the assessment system for the 2010-2011 school year. It specifies that physical education reporting requirements shall be added on or after July 1st, 2011, and the Dash 2 amendment addresses the blanks that were originally presented in the bill to us.
Oh, yes, those new blanks. Okay, we're in work session. What would be the pleasure of the committee?
We've already done the Dash 1.
And we did. We already adopted the Dash 1, so we only have one more to do. That's to fill in the blanks. Ooh, what fun.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 372.
Senator Cruz moves the Dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 372. Any discussion?
Madam Chair, just and I know this is out in time, obviously, but we were talking about unfunded mandates. This clearly is one.
Yeah.
So I have some concerns over whether this is appropriate.
Well, it's an unfunded mandate at the moment. I think once it gets down to Ways and Means, we're going to have to make that decision about it.
It does not have subsequent referral, does it?
This one does not, but the other bills that went, I think the other bills funding PE do. Didn't they? The other ones that we sent down?
The other ones that we did send down to Ways and
Means.
Yeah, we added, I think we actually added the subsequent referrals on them.
Oh, yes, see, we were cautious about that. Okay, but this one you're concerned about because by 2011 you don't think we're going to get there.
Madam Chair, it's just that we have... This wouldn't be the first time we had put something in statute and money never followed it. So, I mean, it's just a concern.
Okay. Yeah, and I know we were talking about that this morning, but I'm hoping the money is allocated in Ways and Means, so that would be the reason why I would pass this out.
It's a lot of faith.
Well, I think the time frame, Madam Chair, allows that, and I'm sure if in 09, in advance of the 10-11, if we haven't been funding it, we will be reminded of that and held to task, and as Mr. Green said. So.
Well, and I'm hoping that Senator Morse is going to work his magic in the interim with our colleagues, and we're going to have some tax reform proposals in 2009, because if we don't, we're in a world of hurt, aren't we? We can't keep funding our state government by bake sale. It's just really what we've been doing since Measure 5. Okay. Any other comments?
No.
All right. Did you move the Dash 2?
I moved the Dash 2.
Okay.
Yes.
And so any further discussion? Any objection to the Dash 2s? All right. So ordered.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 372 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I don't know.
Okay. That's not a very hearty.
No, it is not. It is not.
Due pass recommendation, but Senator Cruz moved Senate Bill 372 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any comments? You want to comment to your motion?
Madam Chair, I'm assuming that we have. Madam Chair, I may vote no on this quite simply to send the message that there is concern that this is potentially another unfunded mandate.
Okay. You may vote no on it today or on the floor?
Well, maybe both.
Better do my homework here. What have I got here on the rest of the committee? Okay, good.
Madam Chair,
I'm going to let you vote no.
And that was with the understanding, but I do think it's important that the message be sent, and I will speak on the floor to the fact that this is potentially another unfunded mandate, and we need to be cognizant of that fact.
And Senator Cruz, I appreciate that you're taking that position and that you will advocate that position on the floor. I actually think we need to talk about it, and maybe Senator Morse can even talk about the fact that we need to fix our tax system. And we're in work session, and Mr. Donovan is sitting there like he wants to say something.
We didn't hear a Ways and Means, subsequent to a Ways and Means. This should join its brethren down in Ways and Means.
You need to come up to the microphone and identify yourself and tell us what you want.
Thank you, Chair Walker, members of the committee. My name is Phil Donovan here on behalf of the American Heart Association. It was certainly our intent, and it was done. And appreciate the public hearing that we'd had on these bills. And there had been a gap, and it had been our intent that this legislation would follow Senate Bills 367 and 372 Ways and Means. We have done an estimate of what the cost would be associated with this, and it's not insignificant, as Senator Cruz has talked about. It is to the tune of $4 million, so we think that this legislation should certainly be sent to Ways and Means, along with Senate Bills 367 and 370.
Madam Chair, that would make me a lot happier. So if it's okay, I would change my motion. If that's
you
okay.
Want, yeah, why don't you withdraw your other motion?
Madam Chair, I withdraw my motion, and I will move Senate Bill 372 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, I think we can do that. We can do pretty much what we want.
Yes,
so,
we can.
Senator Cruz moved Senate Bill 372 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Does that make everyone more comfortable?
Madam Chair, with that, my concerns are appropriately dealt with.
Okay. And I see everybody smiling, and we're going to see this again, Senator Morse, and we expect to. And I'm glad we're doing this because it is a better way to assess the money needs and how it's all going to fit in the bigger picture. So with that, Ms. Gravel, you want to take the roll?
Aye.
Aye.
Excuse.
Aye.
Aye. Senate Bill 372 is on its way to Ways and Means. Thank you. All right, we're going to open a work session, or going to close the work session on 372, open a work session on 517. Ms. Richardson, bring us up to date what's going on here, please.
Madam Chair, this is our steroids bill, originally sponsored by President Courtney. I can speak to the original bill. We have two amendments before us. Should I can review all of the above?
Please.
The bill prohibits school district employees from knowingly selling, marketing, distributing, endorsing, or suggesting ingestion of steroids or performance-enhancing supplements to students. It directs the Department of Education to work with voluntary organizations approved to administer interscholastic activities to develop steroid and performance-enhancing supplement education programs and include such information in health and physical education curricula. It requires coaches or athletic directors to attend biannual workshops on steroid abuse and prevention strategies for use of performance-enhancing supplements. It defines performance-enhancing supplements, steroids, and school district employees. It declares an emergency would take effect upon passage. The Dash 1 amendments changed the education requirements for coaches and athletic directors to attend biannual workshops which is in the original bill, to training once every 4 years. The Dash 2 amendment retains that change and replaces the uses of the word steroid with the uses of the word anabolic steroid, which has its own definition. And I think that is what we've got.
Okay, and we need both amendments. The Dash 2 does not encompass the Dash 1.
Actually, the Dash 2 does carry forward the Dash 1 change.
Okay.
So we could, yes, in the sense, essentially they're incorporated.
Okay, so we don't need the Dash 1. All right. Senator Cruz, do you want to make a motion?
I was going to say, is that correct?
I don't know that that's correct.
Line 30, page 2.
Page 2, line 29. Department shall require school districts. Oh, I'm sorry, it goes back to the original language.
Yeah.
Biannual.
Yeah, I think we need both.
Okay, on page 2 of the printed bill, line 13. Okay, is there anyone here on these amendments? Leaving us all on our own here, but I think you're right.
I think we need both.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm trying to find the bill here. Here it is. Okay, you're exactly right. We do need both.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 517.
Okay, Senator Cruz moves the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 517. Any discussion? Hearing none, so ordered.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendment, Senate Bill 517.
Senator Cruz moves the Dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 517. Any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Thank you, an expression of thanks to Senator Courtney for being responsive to the testimony that was given. And I think this is a good amendment, so I just want to acknowledge that. Thank you.
You're welcome, and I agree. I thought the testimony was important to hear, and I thought that some folks offered some good suggestions. That's why I like public hearings. That's what it's all about. And I met with Senator Courtney's office after the committee and suggested that they make some of those changes, and they worked hard to do that, and I think we've got ourselves a pretty good bill this time. Okay. So no further discussion. The Dash 2 amendment is ordered.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 517 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 517 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any further comments? Okay, you want to take the roll, Ms. Gravel?
Aye.
Aye.
Excuse?
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Aye. Senate Bill 517 will go, as amended, will go to the floor. Yahoo. And I'm going to assign Senator Courtney to that bill.
Good job.
Yeah. All right, we'll close the work session on 517. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 198.
Oh, this is a fun one, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 198 excludes degree mills and diploma mills from the definition of a school for purposes of schools authorized to confer academic degrees. It authorizes the Oregon Student Assistance Commission to terminate unrecognized post-secondary accrediting bodies, eliminates the schedule of application fees for conferring degrees, and authorizes the commission to set fees by rule. It declares an emergency and would take effect July 1st, 2007. We have three amendments before us. The Dash 1 is a gut and stuff. It defines diploma mills. It exempts from that definition schools that offer degrees in only theology or religious occupations. It authorizes the Oregon Student Assistance Commission to terminate activities of diploma mills and unrecognized post-secondary accrediting bodies. It adjusts for inflation the schedule of application fees for conferring degrees. It adds a fee for partial degree programs. It authorizes the commission to assess costs for use of experts to evaluate programs. It declares an emergency and takes effect July 1st, 2007. Now, we heard that one before. We've got two more, and my comments will refer back to the Dash 1 amendments and stuff like that and stuff. The Dash 2 carries forward the changes of the Dash 1 amendments, but it deletes the language that the commission can terminate activities of diploma mills that, quote, might potentially, end quote, issue degrees to Oregon students. It also moves the civil penalties for improper representation of possession of an academic degree to a separate statute. The Dash 3 amendments are just like the Dash 1 amendments, except there's a different definition of diploma mills. There's a change in diploma mills that the commission may terminate, And it does not specify for the commission the rules on that they would set out on whether a school is a diploma mill. There's much?
Yeah, it sure is, and I'm losing my patience on this bill. So I want both of you up here. I want whoever's involved in these three amendments to park yourselves right in front of the committee. And I want to know, what are we looking at here? Dash 1, dash 2, dash 3, what do you want? Why do you want it? What's the problem? Why can't we get it right? Okay, who wants to go first? Mr. Contreras.
I think I have to go first, Madam Chair, and thank you for the patience that you have shown us through this process.
And state your name.
I'm Alan Contreras, Administrator of the Office of Degree Authorization.
Thank you.
And originator of the original bill that has now been amended into oblivion, but there are certain concepts that are still here that are in the original one. Basically, what we have been trying to do is to take the important parts of the original bill and meet the needs and the issues raised by lobbyists for two different unaccredited, private degree providers at the same time as we hang on to the parts that we thought were important. Through that process, we've had too many drafts in a kind of clunky process for which I apologize. What we have in front of us right now works for the agency and it works for these gentlemen. I did not see these until this morning, but I have had a chance to look through them.
Okay, when you just say what we have right now,
I'm
yeah.
looking at the dash threes.
All right, that's what I want
now,
to know.
There is. I am going to talk briefly about two other things. The Department of Justice in this process has raised a recommendation that the penalty section that has been in the ODA statute for 10 years be moved at some point out of the section it's in into a different section. That is an issue that we didn't have at the beginning and that none of the other gentlemen here have. I have not had an opportunity to talk to them about how important they think this is. I consider it sort of a technical issue. If you would like to wait for us to try to meet with DOJ, we can try to do that. I'm going to be out anyway.
We're shaking our heads DOJ's known about this bill forever.
Well,
and if they didn't get off their patootie to talk about the problem.
Well, Madam Chair, they're famous for technical things
yeah.
don't necessarily Chair, change the way
Senator
business
Cruz,
is done.
On that issue, I am with you 100%.
Okay.
Well, good.
I do, on page 4 of the dash 3s, both Mr. Lyon and I noticed something this morning that we had managed not to notice before. And just bear with me a sec here.
Okay.
On line 22, page 4, the capital E subsection, it reads, for a certificate or for any title conferred upon completion of a partial degree program, comma, $1,000. That is the fee section. There is no reason for the words title conferred upon completion of A to be in there. Titles are not conferred for the completion of partial degree programs ever. I do not know why that was written that way. I don't know anybody who drafted it that way. It just seems to magically be in there. That section should read, for a certificate or for any partial degree program, comma, $1,000. And again, I apologize for that error, even though I didn't write it.
Okay. I am not going to send this bill, because it's been such a headache, over to the House with any change that needs to be made to it. So I'm going to send you back to the drafting table to get me a dash 4 that takes out those words that are a problem for you. And then we're going to bring this bill back, and we're going to move the darn thing and get it out of my hair. And if DOJ has an issue, well, they'll just have to take it up on the House side, because I'm not going to entertain it.
I don't plan on asking them, Madam Chair.
Good. Senator Cruz.
I just want to make clear, we got the three principles right here. If we make this change, everybody's okay with the threes. So we don't need to do anything except get a dash four and move the bill.
Yeah.
Correct? Beautiful.
Yes, sir.
And no nods, because you're audibly on the record. I want an answer in the record.
Madam Chair, Devin Lyon, on behalf of Portland Bible College, yes.
Okay. George?
George Okulich, on behalf of Warren National University, yes.
Okay.
It's a beautiful thing.
It is a beautiful thing. So that's what we're going to do. Please contact Ms. Hunt immediately. We will roll this over. What is today, Tuesday? Can we roll it over into Thursday?
Mm-hmm. That's an easy amendment.
We're rolling it over into Thursday. I don't need your presence, gentlemen. Alan, I know you have to drive all the way from Eugene. We've all had your representation today, so we don't need anything further, and we'll just pass it and get it moving. Okay?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you. We're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 198 once again. And I see James in the back of the room. Did you need something? Okay, great. All right. Well, I think the work of this committee, I'm going to X through 1 and 2 and 3. I think the work of the committee is done today. Anything for the good of the order? Wow, we are ahead of time. Enjoy your 15 minutes. Our committee is adjourned until Thursday. Thank you.
Our other committee.